Yesterday we saw a few filters to remove certain types of noise. Today we will look at a few more filters to remove periodic noise, and then look at the design of an optimal filter, which is the Wiener filter, and then adaptive filters to cancel non-stationary signals or noise. So the problem that we will start with today is the design of a filter to remove periodic artifacts such as power line interference, 60 hertz or 50 hertz, that will come in somehow from the power supply onto your signal. The characteristics of 60 hertz noise, as I showed earlier, are such that in the spectrum of the signal, you will observe a spike, almost impulsive components, at the frequency of the power line signal, and if it is distorted, at its harmonics. So you can remove them by applying a notch filter, which will set those components to zero, or by passing the signal through a filter that has zeros on the unit circle in the Z plane at the positions of those frequencies. As we saw yesterday, if you put zeros at certain frequencies on the unit circle in the Z plane, the gain of the filter at those frequencies will be equal to zero. The gain is zero, that will be attenuated. That frequency component is attenuated. So we want to reject certain components, so use a fairly simple design to put zeros at those positions. So if F0 is the interference frequency, the angles of the complex conjugate poles required are F0 divided by FS times 2 pi. As we know, in the Z domain, this is the Z plane, and here we have the unit circle, and this is Z equal to 1, which is DC, and this is Z equal to minus 1, and that is half the sampling frequency, and this is also the sampling frequency, FS. So if you want to cancel some particular frequency, let's say it is here, the frequency of that will be, and then you need another zero here, and this is, let's call theta naught divided by 2 pi will be the ratio, and then when you multiply that with FS, that will give you the frequency F naught corresponding to that zero. So you just have to adjust your, I think that is the same as here, but I turned around. F naught, I just switched it around here. So place the zero at that particular angle, and if harmonics are present, then you put these zeros, additional zeros, at n times that, wherever you have the harmonic. A basic notch filter design example is to consider, let's say, power line interference at 60 hertz, and let the sampling rate be 1,000 hertz, as in the case of the ECG and heart sounds that we have. The notch filter frequencies are omega naught equal to plus and minus F naught over FS times 2 pi. It turns out to 21.6 degrees, plus and minus, at this rate of sampling. So it is not where I showed, but it's on at 21 degrees. The zero locations are given by cosine omega naught plus minus j sine omega naught in the Z domain. The radius of the zeros is equal to 1. And you can calculate the positions. Once you get the coordinates, you can put them in the expression 1 minus z to the minus 1 times z1, 1 minus z to the power of minus 1 z2. So when z is equal to z1 at 0, this is equal to 1, 1 minus 1 is 0. So the transfer function is 0, the gain is 0. Similarly, another 0 here. Expand that, you get the coefficients. So these are the BK coefficients, 1, minus 1.859, so on, and plus 1. If you want the gain at DC to be equal to 1, you calculate from here what is magnitude of H of 1. Note that Z equal to 1 is DC. So if you want H1 to be equal to 1 in magnitude, calculate H1 from this and then divide the expression by that quantity so you normalize the gain. H1, of course, is simply 1 minus 1 point Z equal to 1, Z equal to 1 there, 1 minus 1.859 plus 1, whatever that is, divide by that quantity. That is, just divide by the sum of the BK coefficients. So, as you go around, evaluating the frequency response at every point, as I mentioned earlier, for every point, you calculate the distance to the zeros, and the value of the frequency response here is equal to this distance multiplied by that distance. And at this point, it is the product of those two distances. When you come here, the distance to one of the zeros is equal to zero, so the magnitude of the transfer function is equal to zero. So in this design, with the sampling rate equal to 1,000 hertz, 0 is there, 500 hertz is here, 750 hertz is here, but 750 doesn't exist in the signal, it is equal to minus 250. And this is the sampling rate, or minus, you can go plus minus, so this is 0 to plus 500, and this is 0 to minus 500 hertz. If you wish, you can go 0 to 500 and then continue 750 and 1,000 hertz with the understanding it is periodic. So 60 hertz is there. Now, this is not a very good design for 1,000 hertz, because what happens is the gain is 0 dB because of normalization at DC. And then it goes down. At 60 hertz, it is zero gain. But then it increases. And it goes to plus 30 dB at 500 hertz. That's not a good design. Now, in this case, suppose the sampling rate is lower, and if the notch zeros are here, then the gain does not increase so much. From here to this point, the folding frequency of half the sampling rate. So the filter will be all right, will be usable. In this case, there is a problem in that the gain increases so much that these components will be amplified. But if the signal has been pre-filtered and there is nothing in this region, it is acceptable. Otherwise, you would want this to go and remain flat here. So you want a filter that starts from zero, goes down, and goes back to zero, and remains at zero dB. That is gain equal to one. So the notch filter ideally should have the characteristics zero, go back, and zero, up to half the sampling frequency. And that is gain equal to one. That does not happen. There is a wide notch. Many other frequencies are attenuated near the zero. But one way to make this sharp and reduce this width is to put poles near the zeros. Because if you put a pole, the gain will go up immediately. So you could possibly include poles here. If you put a pole, it must be in a complex conjugate pair. And of course, you cannot put a pole on the unit circle. You want the poles to be near the unit circle, so the gain will be high. So you can put additional poles immediately on either side of the frequency where you have the zero, and then you have to have them here too, then you may get a response like this. So this is ad hoc or empirical design by experimentation, because there is no particular rule as to what should be the radius of that of those poles. The radius has to be less than 1. Should it be 0.9? Should it be 0.8? Should it be 0.95? There is no specific rule there, but that is a design practice that could be applied. But note here that this is not a desirable characteristic of a filter. Now, in the signals that I have in this case, we saw earlier from the Fourier transform, the Fourier spectrum, that there are also harmonics at 180 hertz, 300 hertz, and 420 hertz. I showed you the power spectrum yesterday. So then you could put zeros at each of these frequencies and create what is called a comb filter, because there are multiple notches. It looks like a comb as you brush your hair. And the angles of these, the first one we saw was 21.6 degrees in the Z domain. This is simply 3 times and 5 times and 7 times. The third, fifth, and seventh harmonics are present, which are the odd harmonics up to half the sampling frequency, 500 hertz. Then you just multiply these by 3, 5, 7 and include those additional zeros, with the sampling rate being 1,000 hertz. If you only can calculate these, but I have done that, and these details are in the book, you don't have to read these numbers. Those are the coordinates of the zeros computed in a manner similar to what we saw for the single pair of zeros for 60 hertz. So you combine them by putting for each one of these a term 1 minus z to the power of minus 1 times each zero and multiply them. You get this for each pair of zeros. There are 4 pairs of zeros. You expand those and you get, if you want, normalize the gain, and you get this transfer function. I have reduced this to 4 decimal places, but in practice you should maintain more accuracy, more decimal places. If you truncate or round off to only 4 or 6 or 8 decimal places, the filter response will be affected. So although I'm giving this only in a shortened format here, in practice when you implement this in MATLAB, you should compute these coefficients to more accuracy, maybe 16 decimal places or whatever the accuracy you have on your computer. Okay? So that will be the set of coefficients. There is one sign that is wrong in the book, and in the corrections, I have given that correction in my updates. I don't remember which one. One of these coefficients in the book has the wrong sign. They should be minus and plus and minus and plus, minus plus, minus plus. So please make that correction. And by the way, there was a problem on my website. I emailed our systems analyst and it's been fixed. Apparently they made some change in Calgary that blocked some of the websites. But today I checked and my website is open and you can access the pages there and the documents. So please do not use these coefficients reduced to 4 decimal places. Compute them to the full precision available. So these are these zeros for the notch filter placed around the unit circle at 60, 180, 300, 420 hertz, and this is 500 hertz. And in the conjugate positions. Okay? Is this clear? Any doubts or questions about this? Okay. And the transfer function in magnitude is this and phase is this, which is piecewise linear. Whenever you encounter a zero, there is a change, because as you come from this side to a point on this side, the angle of these will change. These vectors, the angles will change, and there is a jump of 2 pi. So the phase is reversed at these points when you cross a zero. But it is piecewise linear. So this game now is a bit more interesting than the other one. Instead of jumping to plus 30 dB, it is being pulled back by the other zeros, except at the end where it goes up again, and this is not desirable. So if you don't want this to happen, you can put an additional zero here and then pull it down. Put one more zero here, then you can bring the gain down. Okay. So here is an example of an ECG signal with 60 Hertz interference. This is from a real signal, as I mentioned earlier. And I low-pass filtered the signal I showed earlier and removed all the high-frequency artifacts beyond, I don't remember, 80 or 90 hertz. And what is left here is the actual ECG signal, but the low-pass filter cutoff is beyond 60 hertz. So the 60 hertz component has remained. This is from a real signal. I didn't add this. And it's very obvious. If you want, I can count this and then measure it, and it will be 60 hertz. And after applying the notch filter, you get this. The increased gain, let me go back. If you don't mind. The increased gain here does not matter in this case because the ECG has been filtered with a low-pass filter, removing everything beyond about 80 hertz, 70 or 80 hertz. So there is nothing here, and the increased gain has no effect. But if there is noise in your signal, that noise could get amplified by this filter, and you don't want that to happen. So then you need to put a zero here and some other zeros to pull the gain down. So this is a nice illustration. All of that is efficiently removed with no other distortion of the signal. There are a few other components removed by this because the notch is fairly wide. What we are getting is not this, but what we are getting is something like this. I don't want to go beyond that, somewhere there. So it's not the ideal filter, but it does the job to a certain extent. Okay. Any questions on that? It's fairly simple. All right. Now, these filters we have seen so far, although they are based on good theory and understanding of the properties of digital filters, properties of the Z-transform, and so on, they do not have a strong design aspect in the sense there is nothing optimized. We want to get the zero at the position of the component you want to remove. So we put it at that point. But we are sacrificing some other components. Is there some criterion that is being minimized or maximized there? No, we didn't do any such thing. We didn't optimize anything in the design of the filters we have seen so far. The derivative-based filter, we said there are certain properties. The derivative has a zero at zero frequency, so it will remove some low-frequency artifacts. But we didn't set any optimization criterion. If you want to design an optimal filter, then you must have a certain criterion. You specify a criterion and then design an optimal filter, and under those conditions that are assumed or specified, you will get the best result. One such design is known as the Wiener filter. The Wiener filter is very popular and is an important design in filtering of signals and the removal of artifacts. It is optimal in the sense that a certain objective function is specified and certain assumptions are made. And under those assumptions, and if those conditions are satisfied, then you get the best possible result of filtering the particular signal. However, the optimization procedure requires certain information to be available in order to design the filter. Or as we will see, the optimal filter at the end will require rather specific information, not simply the knowledge of the frequency bandwidth, which we had to have earlier too to design the low-pass filters and other filters we saw. We had to know what is the frequency of the power line interference. That's fairly simple. But now you will see that you require a parametric representation of certain characteristics of the signal and the noise in order to apply the Wiener filter. Regardless, because it is derived using an optimization technique, it is an optimal filter. So the problem here is stated in this manner. Design an optimal filter to remove noise from a signal. Given that the signal and noise processes are independent, stationary, random processes. Independent here means statistically independent processes. And they are stationary, so their characteristics are not changing. And you assume them to be random. You may assume the desired or ideal characteristics of the uncorrupted signal to be known. In fact, this will come from the optimization process. I'm putting it ahead of the game. But this, rather than finding this as a surprise later, it is better to state that you know some characteristics of the original signal based upon your experience. Here is a noisy ECG signal. You don't know what the original of this particular ECG signal looks like. But you know in general what ECG signals look like from your experience. You may have a database of clean ECG signals that were obtained in the past. From such signals, you may be able to create certain models of the characteristics of clean ECG signals. And that is adequate for this purpose. The noise characteristics may also be assumed to be known because you will require some characteristics of noise. The solution to this problem as posed is the Wiener filter. Wiener filter theory provides for optimal filtering by taking into account the statistical characteristics of the signal and noise processes. The filter parameters that are derived are optimized with reference to a certain performance criterion. There is an objective function that needs to be considered. The output is guaranteed to be the best achievable result under the conditions imposed and the information provided. There are certain items of information required, and you have to provide those into the design. If what you provide is inappropriate, you get inappropriate results. If what you provide is correct for the situation, then you get the best possible results. The Wiener filter is a single input, single output FIR, that is finite impulse response filter, with real input signal values and real coefficients. It's a physically realizable filter. So let's take a look at this figure. As we saw earlier, this looks like simply a moving average filter, but in a moving average filter for smoothing, all the coefficients are positive. Here, these coefficients will not all be positive. So here you simply have a series of delay elements. So if this is the input xn, this is xn minus 1, xn minus 2, so on, xn minus m plus 1. There are m coefficients starting with w0, w1, so on, to wm minus 1, where m is the order of the filter. So you take a weighted combination of these samples of the input signal, and that is the output of the filter. We will call this output D tilde N, where D represents some desired signal. What you have here is assumed to be a corrupted version or a noisy version of some signal that we will call D. And what the filter produces is an estimate of that D. So you're estimating something. The difference between the two is an error of estimation that we'll call E. Of course, in practice, you don't know this. If you have this, then there is nothing to be done. We will assume this is available at the moment and then calculate what are the characteristics of these entities involved and then remove the requirement that this is available, but instead we will see we will need some statistics of D. So the Wiener filter has these coefficients wi, I going 0 to m minus 1. The input is x, the output is d tilde n, and it is treated as an estimate of some desired signal. Dn, that represents the ideal and uncorrupted signal. Depending upon what is contained in the input x, you will have different designs. If we assume for a moment that the desired signal is available, the estimation error can be formulated as En equal to dn minus d tilde n, simply the difference on a point-by-point, sample-by-sample basis. So d tilde n is the output of a linear FIR filter. And this is the convolution of the input xn with the tap weight sequence, wkxn minus k summed over all the k. That is obvious from the signal flow diagram. Wi is the impulse response of the filter. If x is equal to delta, then that is the impulse response. By the way, I had an illustration of convolution, but I suppose you have seen convolution in other courses. Are you all familiar with convolution of 1D signals? Okay, then I don't have to show that. For easier handling of the optimization procedures, the tap weight sequence is converted into a weight vector. So you have this vector W that is simply the set of the coefficients W0, W1, and so on. And instead of writing it vertically, you write horizontally in the book and put a transpose. So this is a column vector. If I write it horizontally, then we show with a transpose. So this is a vector now. The convolution expression may be converted into a matrix format or vector matrix combination. A vector can be simply seen as a matrix with only one column. The tap rates are combined with m values of the input in convolution, and at a given instant of time, there are only m values that are used to create the output. So you can create a vector x which contains m samples of the input from the present sample going back m minus 1 samples. Those are the input values being used at the moment to compute the current output value. Note that this vector xn varies with time, because for every new sample, a new sample comes here and an old sample goes out. At a given instant m, the vector contains the current input sample and the preceding m minus 1 input samples, xn minus 1, xn minus 2, so on, xn minus m plus 1. So that is the vector x. Now, convolution can be written in a simpler format now as d tilde n, the output of the Wiener filter, as w transpose xn. And that is also equal to xn transpose w, or can be written in this format in these triangular braces x, w. We will work on an example later on. The estimation error then is dn minus w transpose xn. The Wiener filter theory estimates the tap weight sequence that minimizes the mean squared value, ms is mean squared, value of the estimation error. So you need to define an objective criterion as to what is it that you want to minimize. And here, it is the mean squared value of that error, en. And that is defined, in that case, the output is called the minimum mean squared error estimate, or MMSE estimate, of the desired filter, and then of the desired response, and then we have an optimal filter under that criterion. The mean squared error is defined as the expectation of e square n. Now, we are assuming that all the signals are random, or you can treat them as random signals, and you define the statistics using the expectation operator, and later on you can convert them to other more familiar entities. E is D n minus W transpose X, and you multiply that with its, that is a square. This is, E is equal to this quantity, and this is the square of that. And in multiplying this quantity with itself here, you take the transpose of this quantity. So what is W transpose X here will be X transpose W there. So you're multiplying E, because it has vectorial components or matrix components, with its transpose. What this gives you is the product with the cross terms included. You get D square N here, DN and DN. My battery is dying. And then you have W transpose here, and you have X and D here when you multiply these two terms. The expectation operator applies to the random variables or random signals in this expression, but W is not random, so it comes outside the expectation operation. So expectation of D, that will be D square. And note that D is a scalar. DN is one value. And then you have expectation of W transpose X multiplied with D. And you can take the W transpose out. That gives expectation of X multiplied with D. And then you have another term, which is the D multiplied with X transpose W. And you have to maintain that order. So expectation applies to D and X transpose, and W is outside. And then you have the product of this with this. So you get W transpose expectation X, X transpose times W. So you get four terms here, with the expectation not being applicable to W. So we assume here that the input Xn and the desired response Dn are jointly stationary. That is an assumption made which makes the Wiener filter applicable only to stationary signals. It is a linear shift invariant filter and is applicable to only stationary signals. The Kalman filter, on the other hand, generalizes this to non-stationary signals. And later on, we will see that adaptive filters, such as the least mean square filter, will also remove this requirement. But the Wiener filter is applicable to stationary signals because of the assumptions made here. Under these assumptions, we can interpret the expectation operators that we have here and the entities being that we see within the expectation operation here. Expectation of D square. Now, D is a signal. Dn, there's only one value, but the expectation of D square is the variance of D. We assume that it has zero mean. So expectation of D square is the mean squared value. But if you assume that the mean is zero, then that is equal to the variance. So we'll write this as sigma squared D. The mean square value cannot be directly related to entities such as the autocorrelation function and power spectral density, whereas the variance will help us in analyzing this a little better. So we can generalize this to the variance under the assumption that the mean is zero. Now we have this quantity, expectation of x dn. Now x is a vector. D is just a scalar. So this is an m by 1 vector. What you're doing is multiplying dn with xn, dn with xn minus 1, dn with xn minus 2, so on. That is a cross-correlation, comparing the current value of D with the current and past values of X. And it is an expectation. It is not just those two values. So when you apply the expectation, what you have here is a cross-correlation function. So this quantity can be expressed as capital theta, where we have theta 0, theta minus 1, theta 1 minus m, and so on. And that's a vector, where theta minus k is expectation of xn minus k dn, because xn as the past samples of X. So this is nothing but cross-correlation. And the other item we had is simply the transpose. That is X and DN, this is DN X transpose N. So this is equal to the transpose of that. So this is simply theta transpose. So it is the same. That's a cross-correlation between D and X. We haven't said yet what X is. We haven't defined the components of X. Then we have XX transpose. Now XX transpose requires a little bit more work, but essentially that is the autocorrelation of the input vector X. Now this is the outer product. It's not the dot product or inner product, but the outer product. So this is M by 1, this is 1 by M, so the result is an M by M matrix. So this expectation, XX transpose, is a matrix that is M by M that will have the product of XN with XN and the expectation of that. And that is nothing but the autocorrelation with no time lag. So that is phi 0. And then you have xn minus 1 with xn minus 1, which is also phi 0 because there is no time difference between the two samples. So the diagonal element will all be phi 0. And then you have phi 1 and so on. Let me write that to make it clear. You have xn, xn minus 1, xn minus m plus 1. This is x, and then you have x transpose, which is xn, xn minus 1, xn minus m plus 1. When you multiply these, what you get is you take this and multiply here, so this is xn, xn. Next you take this and multiply with the same. You get xn minus 1, xn, so on, xn minus m plus 1 times xn. And for the second row, you take this and the second row, which is xn minus 1, xn, xn minus 1, xn minus 1, so on. So you have all the cross products between all the terms in xn. So you have xn, xn, and along the diagonal, you have the same elements getting multiplied. You take the expectation of each one, and there is no delay between these two, there is no delay between these two, so they're all phi 0. For the others, I'm only showing some combinations there. You get phi minus 1 and phi 1. Depending upon how you write these, I should have written, if I take this and that, I should write this first. And if I come back and do this first, I should write this as xn times xn minus 1. The autocorrelation is symmetric, so phi minus 1 and phi 1 will be the same. So now you have the autocorrelation matrix, which is symmetric, these two being the same, and along the diagonal you have autocorrelation for zero delay. Okay? So within that, you have in the row k and column I, you have phi I minus k, where you have the expectation of n minus k times n minus I using all the cross products between the terms in the vector x. So phi I minus k is equal to phi k minus I, or phi k is equal to phi minus k. All right? with the assumption of wide sense stationarity, which means the first and second order statistics do not change with a shift in origin or not affected by a shift in the origin or reference, the M by M matrix phi is completely specified by the M values of the autocorrelation function. Although it is M by M, there are only M unique values because phi k is equal to phi minus k, and nothing changes with a shift in time. So it's fixed. So the signal is assumed to be stationary. And then the objective function for optimization becomes sigma squared d, which is the variance of d, the desired signal, minus w transpose theta, minus theta transpose w, plus w transpose phi w. Theta is the cross correlation between x and d. We don't know what that is because we don't know what x is. And phi is the autocorrelation matrix of x. The mean squared error, this is the mean squared error of the output, is a second order function of the tap weight vector because you have w transpose w there. To determine the optimal tap weight vector denoted by w naught, then we differentiate this with respect to w, the vector, set it to zero, solve, and we get the optimal values. There are a few rules regarding taking derivatives of vectors and matrices that we need to recognize. The derivative of theta transpose w or w transpose theta is equal to theta with reference to w. And the derivative of w transpose some matrix w with reference to w is 2 times that matrix times w. Essentially, this is squared, so you get 2w, but because of the vectors and matrices, you have to follow the rules of multiplication. So those are basic properties of taking the derivatives of these expressions and applying this rule or these properties, we get the derivative of the objective function with reference to w is minus 2 theta plus 2 phi w, and set that to 0, solve, you get the relationship phi w naught is equal to theta, or w naught is theta in phi inverse theta. This is known as the Wiener-Hopf equation or the normal equation. The optimal filter, just there, is w naught equal to phi inverse theta. So if you know these quantities, phi and theta, you have the Wiener filter, which is optimal under the minimum mean squared error criterion, with the assumption of stationarity and independence that we mentioned earlier. Okay? Any questions about this? So if you want, I can expand this. This is the autocorrelation matrix we saw earlier. That is the weight vector. This is the cross-correlation, which is m by 1. This is m by m, and that is m by 1. Or you can write it in the array format. W optimal I times phi I minus k is theta minus k on an element-by-element basis. And they are equivalent. What I would suggest is later on, please write these equations and go step by step by hand yourself and make sure you understand every step. Otherwise, if you just read this and listen to me now, it may vanish or go away later on. So please go through the exercise of deriving this yourself and make sure you understand every step. The minimum mean squared error then is J min equal to sigma squared d, and you substitute the w here, theta transpose phi inverse theta. So given that the signals are stationary, you have phi I minus k equal to phi k minus I and theta minus k equal to theta, then we can write this expression in a different format, just switching. We had theta minus k, we can change that to this expression where you have a convolution relationship. you have I and minus I and sum on I, and the shift applied is equal to the output. So this is a convolution relationship now. So you can convert the expression we had earlier into a convolution expression involving the autocorrelation function and the cross-correlation function. Okay? Do you recognize this as convolution, except the W naught? Take that out, and that is a convolution. Right? I would like you to recall that the basic convolution relationships are these in the continuous time and discrete time, where in discrete convolution, yn, the output at the instant n, is given as a convolution. I'm just writing the summation limits as plus minus infinity, but you don't have to specify that. It could be whatever. Whatever the range, if they are causal, then the range will be from 0 to t. And here it will be from 0 to n. So if you want, I can make it 0 to n. And this will be going from 0 to t. Under the assumption of causality. So here the output index is n. The summation is from on the index k. And on that, both must be functions of k. And one of them should be reversed with reference to the index of summation or the index of integration. So h is being reversed. It's a function of minus k and shifted by n, which is where you want the output. So that is the basic definition of convolution. And now this expression is a convolution. So we can write this as wk convolved with phi k equal to theta k. The O here is to indicate it is the optimal. Now we know from properties of convolution in the Fourier transform that convolution in the time domain is equal to multiplication in the frequency domain. So take the Fourier transform. This is W of omega. That the Fourier transform of the autocorrelation is equal to the power spectral density. You must have seen that somewhere, right? Okay. These properties are important, and in the exercises at the end of some of the chapters, I have given some exercises related to these properties, where I ask you to prove that the Fourier transform of the convolution of two signals is equal to the product or multiplication of their corresponding Fourier transforms. The Fourier transform of the autocorrelation function is equal to the power spectral density. These are basic properties, but if you have forgotten them or if you are not comfortable with them, please derive these. Go back to the Signals and Systems textbook from whenever you took that course, and please go through that by hand, one step at a time. Okay? So we have these important relationships now. Applying the Fourier transform, the convolution becomes a multiplication. And in this, there are two other properties that come in. The Fourier transform of the autocorrelation of a signal is equal to its power spectral density. So the SXX here refers to the power spectral density of the signal X, which is the input signal. Theta, we said, is the cross-correlation between X and D. The Fourier transform of the cross-correlation function is equal to the cross-spectral density, which is written as SXD here in this notation. So you're getting the Fourier transform of one signal x multiplied with the complex conjugate of the Fourier transform of the other signal d. That will be SXD. So please go through the definitions of these and take the Fourier transforms, reduce the integral, change the variables, and arrive at the final result. If you do that, then you get this relationship. So the frequency response of the Wiener filter is this cross-spectral density divided by the auto spectral density or the pass spectral density of the signal, x. Typically, we would like to deal with filters in the frequency domain and understand their behavior in the frequency domain. So W of omega, which is the frequency response of the optimal Wiener filter, is the ratio of two spectral densities. One is the cross-spectral density between x, the input, and d, the desired unknown signal. And the other one is the power spectral density of the input signal. Of course, you know the input signal, so you know this. But what is that? We need to know the cross-spectral density between the input signal and the desired signal. We don't know the desired signal. But the next step is to ask the question, what is in the input signal and how is it related to the desired signal? But this is the general format of the optimal Wiener filter. So derivation of the optimal filter requires specific knowledge about the input xn and the desired response dn, the autocorrelation phi of the input, the cross-correlation theta, or their Fourier transforms. They are the same. I mean, they're equivalent information. The cross-spectral density and the pass spectral densities are related to these via the Fourier transform. So if you know one, you know the other. In practice, dn is not known, but it may be possible to estimate its statistics or to obtain estimates of its temporal or spectral statistics. You don't know the exact waveform of d, but you may know from prior experience with such signals, such as if you know it is the ECG, you know what the spectral densities of good ECG signals look like, clean ECG signals look like. You know what the autocorrelation function of good ECG signals will look like. You just need a model of that. It could be a mathematical model. It need not be every data sample of that function. But you may have some sort of a function. Most autocorrelation functions are Laplacian functions. They decay rapidly because most real-life signals are predictable from one sample to the next. Or you can predict a sample using a few previous samples. Then the autocorrelation is high between adjacent samples for small delays, but for large delays, the values are uncorrelated, and then the autocorrelation function decays rapidly in an exponential manner. You can specify an exponential distribution like that using just one parameter, its variance. So all you need is an estimate of the variance, and then from that you can get, assuming it'll fit the model, you can get an exponential model or a Laplacian model of the autocorrelation function, and its Fourier transform will also have a similar behavior. And not similar behavior, I mean you can get the Fourier transform analytically, and then you know the spectral densities. So depending upon the application and the nature of the input and how it is related to the desired signal, we will get different Wiener filters. Now, if the Wiener filter is to be applied to remove noise, we typically make the assumption that the input xn is the desired original signal d plus some noise, eta. So xn is dn plus eta n. So So the input signal that you already have collected from a patient is assumed to have the real signal that you want, which is, let's say, the ECG, plus some noise. And we will typically assume that the noise is statistically independent of the signal, they're uncorrelated and so on. That's common. In vector notation, this is xn equal to dn plus eta n. That's a vectorial representation of m samples, the current and m minus 1 previous samples. Then, the autocorrelation function that comes in the Wiener filter is xx transpose, which is d plus eta times d plus eta transpose. Now, assuming that the noise process is statistically independent of the signal and the mean of at least one of them is zero, because you get some products of the means and then you can set them off to zero, you get this quantity, expectation of d times eta transpose. Here you have expectation of dd transpose, which is autocorrelation of d. You get eta eta transpose, that is the autocorrelation of eta, the noise. And then you get the cross terms, d with eta and eta with d. So then, considering one of those, d times eta transpose is equal to the other one, doesn't matter which way you write. And if they are independent, then you can separate them, because the joint probability density function is equal to the product of the individual probability density functions. Then the expectation of the product will be equal to the the product of the two expectations applied individually. So expectation of d eta transpose or expectation of eta transpose d will be equal to expectation of eta times expectation of d. So they are separated out. And these are just the means. If one of them has zero mean, then that is zero. So the cross product or cross term here is removed. So phi d d transpose plus expectation of eta eta transpose is what is left. And that is simply phi d plus phi eta, the sum of the autocorrelation functions of the individual signals d and eta. So these are m by m autocorrelation matrices of the signal and noise. The cross correlation that we had, expectation of x with d, x is d plus eta times d, and we saw earlier that if you take this, it is zero. Expectation of d with eta is zero because they are statistically independent. So it leaves only with d. It's a little strange. D, they are the same thing, but the boldface d is a vector having the current sample and m minus 1 previous samples. D is a scalar. That is simply, again, the autocorrelation of the signal d, because you are simply getting dn with the first element dn, dn with the second element dn minus 1, dn with the third element dn minus 2, so on. So that is simply the autocorrelation for m minus 1 delays. So this is the autocorrelation function, not in a matrix form in that, but simply one array. The values are the same. They're just written in a different format here and a different format here. Okay? So the optimal Wiener filter then is phi d plus phi eta inverse times phi 1d. I'm using the notation 1 to indicate these are m by m, this is m by 1. You take the Fourier transform, then SXX is SD plus S eta. SXD is just SD. And then the Wiener filter frequency response is SD, the power spectral density of the desired signal divided by the power spectral density of the desired signal plus power spectral density of the noise. Or, I'm missing a, okay, now it comes. Or you just divide by this, it is 1 divided by 1 plus S eta over SD. This is a noise to signal ratio, signal-to-noise ratio inverted, in the frequency domain for every frequency sample. So 1 over 1 plus a noise to signal ratio as a function of frequency. That's all. That is the Wiener filter. So derivation of the Wiener filter requires SD and S eta, the power spectral densities of the desired signal and noise. But now we see that we don't need D to derive the optimal filter under the minimum mean square. The autocorrelation function can be obtained in this manner. Suppose you have in your collection 100 or 1,000 good ECG signals. From those, you can compute the autocorrelation function of that entire population and then fit a smooth curve of some smooth model of some type, typically a Laplacian, and use that because you don't want any particular data sample to affect your design. You take the average over a large population, fit a mathematical model so you can remove any irregularities or particularities that are related to your data collection and use that model. Take the Fourier transform, you get the power spectral density. The power spectral density of noise, typically we assume noise is flat, white noise. If it is not white, then you have to have a model. You can record the noise from your amplifiers with no input and estimate the variance and then have a flat power spectral density model related to the variance. Or you may be able to estimate the noise spectral density from the signal. There are situations where in the signal that you have recorded, you know there are parts where there is no signal and what is there is only noise. For example, if you are recording the ECG signal, between the T wave of one cycle and the P wave of the next cardiac beat, there is nothing happening. There is no ECG. What is present in your signal there is simply noise. So you can cut portions from your data of that nature and take, compute the average power spectral density, fit a model, use that. But there are several practical methods to derive these quantities. So designing the optimal filter requires knowledge of the power spectral densities of the desired signal and the noise process and or models of these. I'll show an example and then we will stop. Take a break. Here's an example with ECG with noise. Let me show you this first. So this is the signal. And in this case, I said we will derive a model by sketching a typical ECG with sharp waves. This was done manually by using a piecewise linear model. Or you can do something else. You can collect from your database signals that are clean and look similar to the ECG that you have on hand. In this case, we drew this manually and got its power spectral density by computing the power spectral density. And then we took segments like this where there is only noise, which would require segmentation of the signal using some technique, or it can be done manually. And then applied the filter. So a piecewise linear model of the desired version of the signal was created by concatenating linear segments similar to the PQRST in the signal, in amplitude, duration, and interval. The baseline of the model signal is set to zero, and where did I say about noise? I haven't said this here. Okay. This is the filtered signal. Designing the Wiener filter. The noise power spectral density was estimated using these segments. So noise has been removed with no particular observable distortion of the ECG. In the frequency domain, This is the spectrum of the original signal, the noisy signal. There are spikes at 180 and 300 hertz, which are the harmonics of the power line. The 60 hertz has been removed. There must have been a notch filter in the signal acquisition unit, which is quite common. The power spectral density of the model is this. The power spectral density of noise that was estimated is this. There is a change in scale. I thought I had all of them to the same scale. These are 0 to minus 100 dB. This is only 0 to minus 60 dB or so. The noise has spikes at 180 and 300 hertz because that is part of the noise. This is the Wiener filter, transfer function. There are some important characteristics where the model indicates that the signal of interest has high energy or high power levels. The gain of the Wiener filter will be high. Where the model of the noise indicates that the noise is strong, the Wiener filter will give low gain. So wherever the noise is large, the Wiener filter gain will go down. Wherever the model of the desired signal indicates that it has high energy or power, the Wiener filter gain goes up. The restored signal has a Fourier transform power spectrum like this, where the noise has been removed and all the other components here have been suppressed. These are comparable directly because they are on the same scale. So beyond about 100 hertz, you can see it's all below 50, and here it is around minus 50 dB. Minus 50 dB is very low, but that is what you have. That's been suppressed. Okay. There is an important observation which I made now that I would like you to see from here. So you have the Wiener filter transfer function like this. If your model SD says that its value is large, then and the noise is small, then a large quantity divided by a large quantity plus a small quantity will be equal to 1. So wherever the signal is strong, the gain of the Wiener filter will be equal to 1. You can also see that here. 1 over 1 plus S eta over SD. Wherever SD is very large compared to S eta, this will be small. So 1 divided by 1 is 1. Wherever the noise is larger than the signal, as given by your model supplied to the filter, if the noise is high, then you are having 1 divided by a large quantity, so the gain goes down. Wherever the signal has 0 spectral content as specified by your model, the gain is 0. Of course, you don't want the situation where all of them are 0. You have to avoid that in computation. But what I said indicates how the Wiener filter does selective filtering on a component-by-component basis depending upon the models you specify. You don't have to put poles and zeros anywhere. But depending upon the models of the power spectral densities that you give, the Wiener filter behaves in this manner. So noise is effectively suppressed wherever the noise is high, and wherever the signal is high, it is passed with minimal attenuation. Okay. So I mentioned the other point about the noise. The Wiener filter derived with the models of the noise and signal PSDs, in this case, in the example I showed, were obtained from the given signal itself. There's no cutoff frequency specified, no poles and zeros specified. So from the given signal, if you can derive models of the signal and noise, you could design the filter. Or if you have a database of clean signals from which you can derive a model, you can use that. You also need an estimate of the noise power spectral density. Okay. Any questions on this? Yeah.
I was wondering that the phase filter, I assume, is not a lot
No, there is no phase. There is, it's only a ratio of power spectral densities. These are real quantities. Each one is a power spectral density, not the Fourier transform. These are squared Fourier transforms.
So you can make a
field of
realization of the
filter. Oh, you mean FAR. Okay, sorry, I didn't. Yeah. If these are real functions and they are symmetric, there should be symmetry in the coefficients, and that should give you zero phase. Yeah. There is no phase distortion. Yeah.
How do you calculate the model of the noise?
What I did was, in this case, sorry, I skipped that, but I explained here. We took, I'm only showing one beat here, but we applied this to more beats of the ECG. We cut parts from the T wave to the P wave manually and took those parts to be just noise because there is no ECG. And from those, we computed the power spectral density. We didn't model. We computed the actual power spectral density averaged over several segments of the ECG in this part. For this example, you may not be able to do that in other examples. You cannot do it with the heart sound. If there are murmurs, there is no gap. In this case, it is possible. So if you have a signal where there are parts where there is no signal energy, then whatever is present in your recorded signal is noise. That is the assumption made here. Okay? So what we did exactly is there. The T to P intervals between successive cardiac cycles, that is normally isoelectric. Then any activity there is noise. So 4 T to P intervals were selected from that signal. And their Fourier spectra were averaged. Fourier power spectra were averaged. And that was taken to be S eta. Now this is not flat. This noise is not flat, not white. It is like this. It has more energy at these components. So we did not make the assumption of white noise. We have the power supply artifact there at the harmonics. It could be anything. We don't care what it is. But from the signal, you estimate. It's quite possible in many applications you have such situations. For example, in images, you may have the picture of some X-ray image like that, a chest X-ray image. You know that there is this part of the image that contains the actual image of the patient. You also know that there are parts here where there is nothing. So you can cut those parts and estimate the noise present there. In the ECG, we took the intervals between the T and P. As I said, if it is an EMG signal, you cannot do this. If it is an EEG,
you cannot do this. If it goes on and on, there's no break, then this is not possible. Then you have to measure the noise in the instrumentation. If it is a TV camera, then you shut the camera, you don't give any insight, and then measure the output. That's the internal noise. Get the variance. Assume it is flat, and then have a flat spectrum. So just the variance of the noise will be adequate. Any other questions? So let's take a 10-minute break.